This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
On Tisha B'Av night, we spoke in particular with a particular regard to the last Motzei Shabbos issue, understanding them and utilizing them. I think it's important to understand that in matters, particularly when one is discussing the kind of things that we're talking over here, there's bound to be an awful lot of repetition over the years, because basically we're talking about Yiddishkeit, and the long and the short of Yiddishkeit is to be a mensch. So you can say be a mensch, and the next year you can say, and the next week you can say be a mensch in a slightly different way, and the next week you can say be a mensch in a still a slightly different way, but in the end of it, that's what one's talking about, to be a mensch. To be a mensch in relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam, to be a mensch in relationship to, with one another, and to be a mensch in relationship to yourself. So how many shiurim can you give on it? I think one has to understand that, number one, at the worst, assuming that the shiur was entirely repetitive, in other words, assuming that we were hearing the same shiur again week after week, it's also alright. I've mentioned to you before, something which is emes, one can listen to over and over again. Something which is not emes, you shouldn't even listen to once. But something which is emes, something which is true, you can listen to over and over again. You can say it over and over again, and you can listen to it over and over again. And the only thing I can assure you is that as frustrating as it might be to hear something repeated, it's much more frustrating to repeat it. So if I can repeat it, it means because I found something new in it. And if I can find something new in it, you can find something new in it. So I wouldn't even be embarrassed if I repeated the shiur word for word. Firstly, I could safely assume that most people didn't understand every word of it the first time. So, okay, you're repeating it. It's not a terrible thing. And even if everybody did understand it the first time, it's emes, so you hear it again. And Mesillas Yeshorim says in his introduction, I don't remember, I need a Mesillas Yeshorim. Have we got one here? Or only in the order? You can just pass me a Mesillas Yeshorim. The Mesillas Yeshorim says in his introduction, don't read my sefer expecting to find any chidushim. Everything, because I'm also just going to tell you to be a mensch, thanks. So don't read it expecting to find the chidushim, but musar is the repetition of things that one already knows. Musar is simply the process of reminding oneself about the things that one has to remember, and one can't remember it unless one reminds oneself. So that's at its lowest level. Assuming that it was totally repetitive, I wouldn't be at all embarrassed. But secondly, if I have grown since the last time I told it to you, then it's not going to be the same. Then automatically I'm going to put some slightly different nuance on it. If I haven't grown since the last time I gave it to you, you've got no business coming to my shiurim. Because there's nothing more useless for a tzibur than to learn from a rebbe who isn't growing. So if I'm not growing, there's no point to the whole thing. And if I am growing, then I should be able to repeat the same shiur, week after week virtually, theoretically, and there should be slight nuances to it, slight differences in it, because I'm different. And how much more so if you're growing. How you should be able to listen to the same thing and it's not the same each time you hear it. If you're not the same person that you were a week ago, how much more you can get out of it. So there are really two areas of newness, although on the surface it appears to be the same. The words are the same. But I've changed since I said it last, and you've changed since you heard it last. So there must be a difference. Good music one can listen to over and over and over again. You can listen to the same recording over and over again, and certainly you can listen to a different recording over and over again. And certainly even if it's the same conductor, but not a recording, the same conductor conducting over and over again, each time it's going to be different. It's not possible. And one has to be sensitive to the differences, but more than that. So far I haven't repeated a shiur yet. Concepts have been repeated, but the way you have to view it is, we're describing or painting a very, very big picture. A very, very big painting. It's a painting that's going to take a lifetime to complete. I mean, literally a lifetime to complete. We're talking about 40, 50 years in Yetzer Hashem, just to complete the painting that we're trying to paint. As long as we're growing, the painting will grow. That's what it is. As we're understanding new ideas, as we're seeing new things, so we're expressing it on the canvas. So we've left ourselves a huge canvas. And one starts painting in little patches, and you paint at the bottom right-hand corner, and then you move somewhere else, and you paint in patches. And later on, we're going to join the patches up. And what happens when there's a repetition is we're going back to a little patch which we've already painted, and another stroke, just one little stroke to that patch, a little nuance, another angle to it, a little dash of color, a little bit more depth, change the shade slightly. And in the collection of these shirim, as you should be collecting them, not necessarily remembering them word for word, but integrating them. So as we go back to a concept we've already done, it's a slight change of that concept, it's a slight development of that concept. And so one moves on and comes back and moves on and comes back. But in the process, this canvas is beginning to take shape and it's beginning to formulate and to develop. So it's important that one understands that. In today's shir, I'm going to start with a question that we've already answered before. I'm going to take it a little bit further and establish a new principle. The question is, there are two Rambams that appear to be very much contradictory. Firstly, there is the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim, in the third Chelek, chapter Lamed Aleph, where the Rambam discusses the two approaches to Torah. Already at his time these two approaches existed, and he claims it existed already in the time of the Gemara, as to whether there is a philosophy of mitzvahs or there isn't. And the Rambam says, of course there's a philosophy of mitzvahs, and anybody who thinks there isn't is not well. There's something mentally wrong with him. That's what the Rambam says. How could it be conceivable that there's no philosophy to the mitzvahs? And the Moreh Nevuchim, really, the Guide to the Perplexed, is a sefer which the Rambam wrote describing the philosophy of Torah. There are two particular mitzvahs, the philosophy of which he describes, that as far as we're concerned. The one is korbanos, sacrifices, where he gives an explanation. He gives a few explanations, but the classical one that he gives is that the Jews, when they came out of Egypt, were steeped in Avodah Zorah, in idol worship, and sacrifices was one of the forms of idol worship at that time, and the Ribono Shel'olam substituted idol worship sacrifices with Jewish sacrifices. That is the long and the short of what he says, which is a very difficult Rambam, although there are very adequate explanations to it. We're not going to go into that now. Whereas the Rambam says in the Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam says at the end of Hilchos Me'ilah, V'chol ha-korbonos kulan michlal ha-chukim hem. The korbonos are all chukim. Chukim are those things for which we don't know the reasons. Amru chachomim shibishvil avoydas ha-korbonos ha-olam oymed. All we know is that the chachomim have told us that it's for the sacrifices that the world exists. Now that's a long way off from what he says in the Moreh Nevuchim. In the Moreh Nevuchim he says it's a concession to idolatry. And yet he says, quoting the Gemara, that this is something on which the Olam stands. This is something absolute, this is a basis of Yiddishkeit, and it's a chok, it's something we don't understand fully. That's the one difficult Rambam. The other difficult Rambam is the Rambam says again in Moreh Nevuchim, in Perek Memchit, in Perek 48, I think it is, the Rambam gives a reason for Shiluach HaKen. And you remember we did the shir when we came to the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKen, the mitzvah of sending away a mother bird before you take away the eggs. If you want to take the eggs from a nest and the mother bird's there, the din is that you have to chase away the mother bird before you can take the eggs. Says the Rambam, the reason for that is cruelty to animals, because it's a natural feeling of the Bria, the creation is so created that a mother goes out of its mind if its children are taken away, and the mother doesn't know where the children are taken. Not only a human mother, but an animal mother too. This is something inherent in the Bria. And if you take it away, you cause incredible pain and suffering to the mother bird. And the purpose of the mitzvah is to ingrain in one a sensitivity to cruelty to others. And the Rambam still says, a kal vachomer, if the Torah is so particular that you've got to be careful as to how you treat a mother bird, and that you can't take the little babies away because you might hurt the mother bird, how much more careful do we have to be in dealing with each other, not to cause one another harm? That's what the Rambam says in Moreh Nevuchim. In his Yad HaChazaka, again, in Hilchos Tefillah, chapter 9, Perek Tes, Halacha Zayin, he says the following, based on the Gemara. All these things I've told you are based on Gemaras and Midrashim. Nothing that the Rambam has said which is his own so far. Mi she'oma b'tachanunim, mi she'richem al-ken tzipur shelo likach ha'em al-abonim, o shelo lishcho et ozev ezbenoi b'yamechot yirachem aleinu. The person is davening. He's asking the Ribbono Shelom for mercy. And he says, Ribbono Shelom, you who were so merciful to the nest of a bird, that you commanded us not to take the children away in the mother's presence, and not to slaughter a child calf on the same day as you slaughtered another calf. May he who was so merciful be merciful also on us. And similar such things. Meshatkin also, you tell him to keep quiet. Not allowed to say such things. Why? Mipnei she mitzvahs eilu gezeiros ha-kosov hain. Because these mitzvahs are gezeiros ha-kosov, the laws, the einan rachamim, and the reason for them is not mercy. It's absolutely contradictory to what the Rambam says in Moreh Nevuchim. In the Guide to the Perplexed, the Rambam says that the reason for these laws is mercy, and in Yad HaChazoki he says, let anybody dare say the reason is mercy, and you tell him to keep quiet. It's not correct. The reason is something else altogether. It's a gezeiros ha-kosov. She'ilu ayu mipnei rachamim. Because if the reason for not taking the child bird away was rachamim, was mercy, cruelty to animals, lo ayamati lanu shchita kolika, then the Torah would not have allowed us to slaughter animals altogether. If the Ribbono Shel Olam is so concerned about the welfare of animals, why does he allow us to slaughter an animal in the first place? From the fact that he allows us to slaughter an animal, you see that you're allowed to do certain things. Why then can't you take away the little children from the mother bird? Gzeiros ha-kosov, that's the law. Now, the Rambam has laid a principle in chapter Lamed Aleph of the third chelik of Moreh Nevuchim that there is a philosophy to the mitzvahs. Furthermore, he said that anybody who doesn't accept this is a little bit sick in the head. Thirdly, he's given particular mitzvahs and he's given the philosophy behind them. Shiluach HaKein and the Korbonos. He comes to his major work, the Yad HaChazaka, and he says, don't think that there's any reason for these. These are chukim, these are gzeiros ha-kosov, it's something without reason altogether. What's going on? Is there a reason or isn't there a reason? And we answered at that time that we learnt this. We answered that there are two disciplines in Torah. There are two different modes of learning, two different studies, and one has to understand their separateness. The first one, there is a philosophy of the mitzvahs. Sure, there's a philosophy of the mitzvahs. The Rambam says quite clearly that there's a philosophy of the mitzvahs. However, when it comes to halacha, when it comes to deciding the practical aspects, what does God want from me now? There you can't use that philosophy. You don't operate with philosophy. There is a philosophy, and you must study that philosophy, and you must know it, but not in psak. When you're paskening a shaila, the philosophy doesn't come into it. Then you work it out mathematically. You work out according to the principles of the Torah, what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from you, but not with the philosophy. You can't start giving your own reasons for it, and therefore, on the basis of that, paskening a shaila. That's how we answered the question at that time. There is a philosophy, and in halacha, the Yad HaChazaka is a sefer of halacha. In halacha, this doesn't come into it. The mercy of the mother bird and the korbanos, all the philosophy you keep out. Straight halacha, that's it. In the Moreh Nevuchim, which is a book of philosophy, there the Rambam goes into it in detail. Now, taking that one step further, I believe that that principle which we laid down at that particular shir, that is, that one is not permitted to use philosophy in paskening a shaila, is in fact an isur d'oraisa. Apart from the fact that if you use philosophy to come to halakhic conclusions, you're likely to reach the wrong conclusions, the use of philosophy to come to your conclusions is in fact an isur d'oraisa. What isur? Lo tosif v'lo tzigra. We have an isur in the Torah, principles in the Torah that you're not permitted to add to the Torah nor to detract from it. Says the Sifrunu, what does that mean? That was in today's Sedra. V'lo yakshav ha-choshev she-kasher tosu sibat ha-isur etzlecho. Lo yiye chet ligroa. And let a thinker not think, let a philosopher not think, that when the reason for a prohibition of the Torah disappears, that there is nothing wrong in removing the isur. Kemo shechoshav Shlomo HaMelech, as Shlomo HaMelech thought, King Solomon, ani arbe v'loy osur, ani arbe v'loy osur. It says in the Torah, you mustn't have too many wives in case they'll lead you astray. And you mustn't have too many horses, a king mustn't have too many horses in case he'll go back to Mitzrayim. He'll go back to the land of materialism. Shlomo HaMelech said, with me there's no such fear. I, the biggest kohen that ever lived, no woman is going to bend me away from the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's no way at all. Therefore, I'll have many wives. Not for his own good, it was L'shem Shemayim. There was a reason why he needed many wives and why he wanted to have them. But this particular prohibition, he said, what's the philosophy of the prohibition that they'll turn my heart aside? That's for the general population, but not for Shlomo HaMelech. A person is outstanding, about such outstanding intellect as myself, and that's not arrogance, he's right, he's correct. His philosophy, his thinking is right. The reason that the Torah gives, L'chorah, on the surface, doesn't apply to Shlomo HaMelech. Nobody is going to push Shlomo away from the service of the Ribbono Shlomo, and certainly not a woman, nor a thousand women. And I'll have horses and I won't go to Mitzrayim. Me, Shlomo HaMelech, you think I'm going to re-establish my connections with Egypt for a love of materialism? It's not possible. And what happens? The Nichshal. He did it and he fell. Says the Sipur, that is the Isser of Lo Tigru Mimenu. Not to remove any mitzvahs of the Torah. So the Pasuk inside says, Lo Sifu al Adovar Asher Anochim Etzave Eschem, don't add on to what I've given you, and don't detract from what I've given you. In other words, don't use philosophy to come to conclusions that a particular part of the Torah applies to me, or a particular part of the Torah is not enough for me. I need to do even more than what the Torah lays down for me. Any such movement falls into the category of the isur of lo tosifu v'lo sigru. The use of philosophy to paskan a shaila falls into the category of lo tosifu v'lo sigru if it leads one to exclude or include mitzvahs which should be part of the Torah or mitzvahs which are not part of the Torah. Now there are a few questions resulting from that. The first one is, if that's the meaning of the Pasuk, then how do we understand the midah, the characteristic of Chassidus? There are various attributes that we're supposed to achieve, that we're supposed to strive to. One of them is Chassidus. What does Chassidus mean? The Mesillas Yeshorim defines what Chassidus means. And I want to read to you what the Mesillas Yeshorim says. Hinei Shoresh HaChassidus. This is in chapter Yudchet, chapter 18 of the Mesillas Yeshorim. The principle of Chassidus, Hu Mashe Omru Zal, is based on what Chazal told us. Ashrei Odom She'amoloi Vatoiro. Happy is the man whose toil is in Torah. And gives the Ribbono Shel Olam pleasure. So you see from there that Chazal split up toiling in Torah and giving the Ribbono Shel Olam pleasure. It is possible to toil in Torah and still not be giving the Ribbono Shel Olam pleasure. The mitzvahs which are given to all of Israel are well known. And their obligations are known. Ad heichan himagaz, how far you have to go. You look up in Shulchan Aruch and you see what halacha is. Onam, mi she'ohev es habore yisborach shemur. But somebody who loves the Ribbono Shel Olam, ahavo amitis, a true love for the Ribbono Shel Olam, lo yishtadel ve'yichavim lifter atzmoy b'mashik v'mefusam min achoy v'ashal kol Yisrael b'chlal. He won't be satisfied to free himself through doing only that which is prescribed for everybody. Elo yikre loy kemosh yikre el ben ohev aviv. But he will be like a son is to a father. And he goes on to describe that if a father just reveals his desires a little bit, just makes known more or less what he wants, a son who loves the father will do much more than what the father asks. That's what love is. Love is to anticipate the needs of your loved one, and in fact to give more than the loved one needs or is asking for. It shouldn't be necessary where you've got a good marriage. It shouldn't be necessary for husband or wife to make their desires absolutely clear to one another. It shouldn't be necessary to call a spade a spade. If they're sensitive to one another and they love one another, as soon as the one party has just intimated a hint that they want or need a certain thing, the other one should be able to act immediately and spontaneously and give what the other one needs and more. That's what love is. And he says it's the same with the Ribbono Shel Olam. When the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us the Torah as it's recorded in Shulchan Aruch, that's the minimum of what he wants. But there's a lot more than that. So the general population don't have to worry about what's more than that. As long as they're keeping what's in Shulchan Aruch, that's very nice. But a chassid, a person who's reached the level of chassidus, he will use the Shulchan Aruch as a means of working out what the Ribbono Shel Olam's real will is, and then he'll take it much further than what the Shulchan Aruch desires of him. That's lo sesif. What do you mean? There's halacha, that's it. There's halacha, which is defined, what is required, to go further than halacha requires. It's a shayla of lo sesif, you're adding on to the Torah. How do we understand in terms of the Sipurna's interpretation of the Isra? How do we understand the mitzvah of chassidus, the concept of lifnim mishuras hadin, to do more than halacha requires of you? Doing more than halacha requires of you is as bad as doing less than halacha requires of you. How can one do it, and where does it fit in? The next two questions come from the sequence of psukim. So let's just read these few psukim, and I'll show you what the problem is. Just before this parsha, it says, "Vaneshev bagai mul beis peor," and we sat. How did they translate bagai? Does anybody? In the valley. and we sat in the valley opposite the base Pe'or, right, the place where Pe'or was. Then, Va'ata Yisrael, and now Israel, Shema el hachukim ve'el hamishpotim asher anochi melamed eschem la'asos, listen to the statutes and the laws which I am teaching you to do, leman tichyu, in order that you should live, uvatem v'irashtem es ha'aretz, and you should come and inherit the land asher Hashem elokei avoseichem lo'sein lochem, the land which God has given you. So number one is, listen to what I'm telling you to do so that you can inherit the land. Next verse, don't add or detract from anything I'm commanding you. To keep the mitzvah of the Ribbono Shel Olam as I'm commanding it to you. The next pasuk, your eyes have seen. Back to Pe'or now. That which the Ribbono Shel Olam has done to Pe'or. Because every man who followed Baal Peor, Hishmidu Hashem Elokecha Mikirbecha, the Ribbono Shel Olam is already destroyed from within you. There's no remnant of anybody who went after Baal Peor. So now you'll see why I included the last posuk of the previous parsha. Because we see that Peor has something to do with it here. The Moshe starts this parsha as they're standing Mul Beis Peor, that same place where there was that trouble with Peor, where the daughters of Peor used to came out, the daughters of Midian came out, and they enticed the young men and they caused them to serve Avodah Zarah. We'll see in a moment exactly what happened there. He's at that place. They've come back. They've done a lot of walking around and now they're back at that same place. And it brings back memories. And the Torah records, that's where they are. Memories of Peor. There's the background of Peor. And now Moshe gets up and he says, listen, O Israel, hear what I tell you to do. Don't add, don't detract, because you remember what happened to Baal Peor. What's Baal Peor going to do with it? What's the connection with the Averos of Baal Peor, the Avodah Zarah, the idolatry that was committed with Baal Peor, and the Isur of using one's philosophy to reach halachic conclusions? And lastly, the third question, I'm going back now to the first Pasuk, and now Israel, hear the laws and the statutes and the laws which I'm commanding you to do, in order that you should live and come to inherit the land which Hashem Elokecha was given to your fathers. Says the Ibn Ezra, what does it mean? You must hear what I'm telling you in order that you'll inherit the land, and if you don't listen to what I'm telling you, you won't inherit the land. They've been promised the land already. Says the Ibn Ezra, no, he's hinting at something else. Leman tichyu, that you should live. Remember, says Moshe, ki ovdei pa'or nishmadu. Those who served pa'or were killed. So if you want to live, listen to what I'm telling you. Well, what's he talking about? The Ovdei Pe'or were killed because they served idolatry. And here he's telling people to listen and not to add or detract from the Torah. What's the connection? And again later on in the Pasuk, what is the connection between Pe'or and this particular Issa? One is idolatry and one is a different Issa altogether. And now we come to the Yesod, to the Chiddush, to the principle of this Shir. And that is that the Isur of Loisosifu Veloisigru, the prohibition of using one's philosophy to Paskin Ashaila, is Avodah Zarah. That's what it's all about. Now that sounds quite a sweeping statement, and we're going to have to analyze it a little bit more carefully. How did Avodah Zarah start? Adam HaRishon, the first man, was created by the Ribbono Shel Olam and is the greatest man who ever lived, basically. His knowledge of godliness, his knowledge of Torah, his knowledge of the world exceeded anything that's ever been after him. So Yetzir Kapov, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam's own handmade creation, the genuine original article. There's never been a man like Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon comes, he knows the Ribbono Shel Olam, he knows this is absolutely clear. He talks to the Ribbono Shel Olam, he communicates with the Ribbono Shel Olam, he was created by the Ribbono Shel Olam, he asked the Ribbono Shel Olam to create him a wife as well, the Ribbono Shel Olam creates him a wife, he knows what it's all about. His children must have been brought up in the same way, and his children's children in the same way. When did idolatry start? Where did Avodah Zarah, the destructive, if we look back in history, what Avodah Zarah has caused, the pain and suffering and anguish and destructiveness and philosophically and religiously and politically that Avodah Zarah has caused, when did it start? What brought on Avodah Zarah? So the Rambam spends a whole perek, a whole chapter in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, describing how it all happened. He won't go through the whole Perek, but I'll read you the first part. Bimei Enosh, it was in the time of Enosh, Ta'u b'nei ha'odom ta'us godo. Man made a massive mistake. V'nivaro atzas chachmei oiso hador. And the intellects of the wise people of that generation went crooked. V'enosh atzmei min hatoyim hoyo. And Enosh himself was one of the mistaken people. So Avodah Zorah started off as one big massive mistake. That's how it, all this destructiveness of idolatry, all these other religions, all these offshoots from the original monotheism that Adam HaRishon had, is all the result of some terrible mistake. What was the mistake? Bezehoi Sotosum, this was their mistake. Omru, they said, now listen to this. Since the Ribbono Shel Olam created all these stars and constellations, unasanam b'morom, and put them up in heaven, and he gave them great honor, he made them beautiful, he made them aesthetically impressive, and they are his servants because they run the world. Actually, the world, the natural tides, the natural rhythms of the world are in fact operated by the constellations of the universe. Therefore it is correct to praise them and honor them and glorify them and give them honor. And this surely is the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, to honor he who the Ribbono Shel Olam has made great. In the same way as if a king knights an individual, takes an ordinary man and gives and confers upon him a knighthood, the king expects you now to start showing honor to that man that he honored. So said the people in the generation of Enosh. The Ribbono Shel Olam has shown honor and glory to the constellations that now run the world on a day-to-day basis. Therefore, surely he wants us to worship, not to worship, but to glorify the stars. That's how Avodah Zorah started. Absolutely l'shem shamayim. They were trying to give pleasure to the Ribbono Shel Olam. They were trying to do what God wanted of them. Philosophically, they worked it out. Since the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's a philosophy they're doing. Since God created the stars and surely the most we can do is now serve the stars. That's it. That was the beginning of Avodah Zorah. And then he traces the development of Avodah Zorah from the beginning of that mistake. And he says further on, V'loy avodas kechovim bilvad, this is in Perek Sheni, and not only the service of idolatry, who she also lihipano sachareha b'machshava, not only the service of idolatry are we forbidden to turn to intellectually, ela kol machshava shehu goyrem lo le'odom la'akor ikor me'ikre ha'tzera, but any intellectual thought which could cause you to deny one of the principles of the Torah, muzhorim anu shelo la'aloso al libeinu, we are commanded not to think such a thought. And we're not permitted to interrupt our other thoughts for such a thought. And we will start thinking, and then we will start following after the thoughts of the heart. Why? The other Rambam lays out down the principle for the Isur of Avodah Zorah. The intellect of a man is limited. And not everybody is clever enough to work the truth out ab initio. Can be done. You can start from scratch and with a straight head on your shoulders. Philosophically, you can go through all the other religions and all the other philosophies, and by a process of elimination, you'll come out with Torah. But since not all intellects are capable of doing that, and the Torah has to be something which is equal for all, therefore the Torah forbade any form of intellectualizing to reach conclusions. And then he says, a little bit further on, V'al inyan zeh his hira Torah, and it's about this matter that the Torah warned us, the Ne'emar ba'an, the Torah says, now he's giving pshat in a posuk which we say twice a day, V'loy sosuru achrei levabchem v'achrei enechem asher atem zonim achrei. The posuk from Shema, and you are not permitted to follow your hearts and your eyes which you tend to follow. Kloma, that means to say, lo yimshach kol echod michem achadeo da'asoy hakatzoro. You are not permitted to follow your limited intellect. The prohibition of loisosuru is now a prohibition to follow your intellect. And don't ever think that your intellect is capable of achieving the truth ad initio without the Torah. That's the Isser of Lois of Suru, and that's Avodah Zarah. So what have we got here? In accordance with the our development of the theme that last year when we spoke about the contradiction in the Rambam, we have a principle here that Avodah Zarah, idolatry in principle, is using one's own intellect to reach halachic conclusions. That's it. Now the parsha makes an awful lot of sense. Let's look at the parsha now. Maneshev Begai Mul Beis Pe'or. Sorry, just before we look at the parsha, let me tell you what happened at Pe'or. They've now come back to Beis Pe'or. Maneshev Begai, they're at that same place where it all happened. What happened? We're told what happened in Gemara Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Vav Amud Aleph. Their God, the question is now, how do you conquer the Jews? With military might, that's out of the question. They were able to realize that all the powerful nations before them had been smashed by these Jews. So they have some spiritual strength. So let's attack their spiritual strength, and that's why they called in Bilam. They didn't call in their army generals, they called in Bilam, the greatest person that they knew who understood matters of spirituality. So Bilam said to them, their God, the God of these people, hates sexual immorality. The heim misavim leklei fishtam. And they have a weakness. The thing that they love are linen garments. And they make talesim out of it and tzitzis out of it and tablecloths for Shabbos. They love nice linen. I'll tell you what to do. Let's use their weakness and God's strength. Make little shops. V'hoshev bahem zonas. And put prostitutes in the shops. Zakeno mi bachutz, v'yolda mi bifnu. Now tell me, how's it going to happen? A boy who even goes to Yeshiva Teres Emes here, you won't even look at a frum lady. Imagine you put prostitutes there. Who's going to come and buy? Who's going to go and buy pishtin? Who's going to go and buy linen there? No, put old ladies there. Old ladies sitting outside. V'yolda mi bifnu, and put the young ones inside. An old lady Nebuch is selling a bit of linen, and you like linen, and she's an old lady and needs a panos. Even a boy from Teres Emes would go and buy himself some linen. Because he doesn't appreciate good linen, maybe. The Yimkirulahim clay fishton, and let the old ladies sell to the Jews clay fishton, all the tablecloths and the talesim. That's what they should do. Also Allahim Kaloim, so they made these little stalls. Mehar Sheleg Ad Beis HaYishimus. They lined the route with these places, little stalls all along the road, from Mount Hermon right until Beis HaYishimus. V'hoshiv Bohem Zoynos, and they put prostitutes there, Zakenus, Zakena Mibachutz, the old ladies outside, the older Mibifnim, and the young ones inside. V'shoshi Yisrael Oichlin V'shoisi Musumechim. And when the Jews were having a Yom Tov, they were having a good time, they were having a party, and finished the Masechta, and they were having a Siyun, had a Schnapps, and they were singing and dancing. But Yotzin L'tayel B'shuk, what do you do afterwards? You go for a walk before you go back into the Beis HaMedrash, you've eaten a lot, and you've drank a lot, now you go with your Chavrusa, you take a walk out in the evening, and they go to the marketplace. Omrus Lo Azakein, or Iyatam Avakish Klei Pishta, maybe you want to buy some tablecloths. Zakein or Omeris Lo B'shaveh. So the old lady says, it's 100 rand for a tablecloth. The Yoda Omeris Lo Befachos. And the young girl sticks her head up and says, I'll sell it to you for 40. Stein Besholish Parmim. This happens 2 or 3 times. And so you leave them both alone. You go into the next store, and the beautiful tablecloth there, and the same thing. You suddenly realize you can get a bargain here. If you deal with the young girls, you can get a bargain. You can get a nice tablecloth. And it's a Shem Shemayim. It's for Shabbos. And it's to put on one Shabbos table. And no interest in the girl at all. Just that's where you can buy your tablecloth. So they go in and they buy. Nothing wrong so far. Halachically, there's nothing wrong. You're allowed to buy a tablecloth from a young lady. There's nothing wrong with that at all. V'achatach, afterwards, Omeris lo harei at kevven bayis. You know, you please feel at home. She says, please take a seat, shave. Take a seat. Shave, b'ro la'atzmecha. Sit down and feel. I'll bring them all out onto the table and you can choose whichever one you want. So they sit down. There's nothing halachically wrong with that. You're allowed to sit down when you're choosing tablecloths. Nothing wrong. The tzurei shel yayin amoni munach etzlo, and bottles of Ammonite wine are on the table, casually placed strategically placed, shall we say, on the table. V'adayin, says the Gemara, and aside, adayin lo nesar yayin shel nochrin. Right? Yayin nesach has not yet been forbidden. Right? It's not wine for which there's been any idolatry service about it. It's just ordinary wine which a guy has touched. So the din d'rabbon and the rabbinical law prohibiting yayin nesach, the ordinary case of yayin nesach, has not yet been enacted. Amr lo ratzoin chashitish de kosher yayin, why don't you have a glass of wine? Nothing halachically wrong with that at that point. It's like having a cup of tea. She offers you a glass of wine while you're choosing your tablecloth. There's nothing wrong with it. Kivan sheshoso boar bo. Once he's had the wine and he's already come from the simcha and he's sitting quietly and all of a sudden he finds himself alone in the tent of a very, very attractive young lady who's serving him and running around for him and doing all sorts of things for him, and he's had a bit of wine as well. He's human. Amar lo. So he says to her, Hashmili, maybe we should get to know each other a little bit better. He's drunk now. Right? Okay, he's still done nothing wrong. But now he does something wrong. But his onus, okay, he's under the influence of liquor. Still, he hasn't committed any avera yet. He's only said. He hasn't done anything. Hoitzia yir oso mitocheiko. She takes out her little charm from her breast, from her bosom. A charm of avodah zarah. She says, okay, but come first, you've got to be like one of us, we've got to get to know each other, we've got to have the same kind of culture. Do an avoda, serve my little chum. I'm a lalo yudi yani. I'm a Jew. Avoda zora never. She says to him, all you have to do is express disgust. That's exactly what pir we won't go into, but it's an expression of absolute abuse. So I'm not asking you to serve it in a glorified way. All I'm asking you, says the girl, relate to it. Spit in its face. Another aside, the Gemara tells us, he doesn't know that that's how you serve that particular idol. You spit in its face. That's what you do. So he spits. Disgust, okay. So in his mind, he's still done nothing wrong. But Api Halotha, he's done. Because the din is, that if you serve an idol the way the idol is meant to be served, even if your intention is not to idol worship it, your intention is not Avodah Zarah, it's also, you're not allowed to do that. It's coming too close to idolatry. That means if the way you serve idols is, that particular idol is by spitting in its face, and you spit in its face out of disgust, you've committed Avodah Zarah, you've committed idolatry. That's the first Avera he's done. Up till there he's done no Avera. That's the first Avera that the young man has done. How did he reach it? Philosophy. All she's asking me to do is to spit in his face. Surely the Rav Nishlam doesn't object to my spitting in the face of an idol. The loy oida, not only that, says the Gemara. It went on from there. I'm not going to leave you alone, she said later on, until you deny the Torah of Moshe. But once you've already related to an idol and you've had a drink with a young idol worshipper and you want to have more than a drink with a young idol worshipper, it happens. And that, they went as far as that, being kofar, denying the truth of the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. But what was the first avera that all started it? Spitting in the face of the idol. What allowed them to spit in the face of the idol? Their own philosophic reasoning. They didn't look in Shulchan Aruch. They would have looked in Shulchan Aruch, they would have known, it's also, you can't do it, finish. You don't understand why not? That's none of your business. You can't. That's how one has to do it. They philosophized, it's only disgust after all, and it's etc., etc., etc. I'll do that as well. What's so terrible? So far, I haven't done an Avera. One step further, it's also not an Avera. It is an Avera. So now the Pasuk makes a lot of sense. At the point of Baal Peor, Moshe is busy giving a B'nai Yisrael Musa. Where are they standing? At the place of Baal Peor, where all that happened. And then there was that terrible tragedy where the Rabbeinu Shalom wiped out so many of them. Now he says, Moshe says, the Ator Yisrael, and now Israel. Here, the laws of the Mishpotim, which I'm teaching you to do. I'm not teaching you philosophy. I'm not teaching you Lamdonis. I'm teaching you Halacha Lamaisa. I'm telling you how to live. Listen, hear. You know, it's a very tragic thing that when one listens to Halacha Lamaisa like a philosopher, you don't hear the Halacha Lamaisa. You're hearing your own philosophy. So you hear what suits you, and you don't hear what doesn't suit you, and you twist what you hear to fit in with your philosophy. That's the danger of listening. Now the big problems in hearing is we don't hear correctly if you're listening like a philosopher. But if you start off from the principle of Shema, just listen, to what? To the Chukim v'Hamishpotim asher ani melamed eschem la'asos. I'm teaching you what to do, not what to think, and not how to think. I'm teaching you halacha lemaisa. Laman tichyu, so that you should live, says the Ibn Ezra. Ki ovdei pa'or nishmodu. Don't forget that the people who served pa'or were wiped out because they didn't listen well to the halacha. They didn't hear the halacha well. The halacha is you can't even spit in the face of pa'or. They didn't hear that halacha because they were busy with their philosophy. Uvachem v'irashtem esa'oret, and then you will come and you will inherit the land which the Rabbi Yishlam has given to you. Lo yisifu ala dover asher anochi mitzaveh etchem v'lo yisigru mimenu. Don't add to what I'm telling you and don't detract. Now we understand, particularly with the Sipuna. Don't think that because the philosophic reason of the mitzvah doesn't apply to me at this moment, therefore I don't have to keep the mitzvah. Halacha has to be kept by at all times, in all places, by all people. Full stop. That's it. Lishmer is mitzvah Hashem alakechem asher anochi mitzaveschem. Einechem haroyos. Your own eyes saw. Et asher also Hashem b'Baal Peor, what the Ribbono Shel Olam did to Baal Peor. Ki chol ish asher holach acharei Baal Peor, every man who followed Baal Peor, hishmidu Hashem alakecha mikirbecha, the Ribbono Shel Olam has wiped him out from between us. Why did he follow Baal Peor? Because he didn't hear properly. Why didn't he hear properly? Because he was busy philosophizing. Now, I've spoken over the last couple of weeks of the harm of being fakniokt. And I told you what Faknyot is. This is Faknyot. Having your own philosophy, and everything has to fit into your philosophy. The result is you don't hear anybody else's philosophy. You'll never have the opportunity to know whether you're right or wrong. You'll never have things to compare with. You'll never have the richness of association with other philosophies. And you'll never even hear the emes. You'll never even hear the truth. Faknyot is where you've got your ideas. Sometimes it's in the name of Frumkat. That's my philosophy. And sometimes it's the name of politics, because I come from such and such a party, or from such and such a youth movement, or sometimes it's the name of my family. That's the way my family has done it. That's it. And everything has to be fitted into that, and everything has to be fit. That's the way my Rosh Yeshiva does it. That's the way my Rebbe does it. That's the way I learn. And that's Faknyot. That's when you become closed to everything, not to anything. Because whatever you hear, you're not hearing. You're busy philosophizing. You're not just listening. So the first principle of learning, and I must tell you this little piece of chumash that we're going to do, lays down the system of learning absolutely with the pitfalls of learning. And the first principle of learning is Shema. Just listen. Hear the principles which I'm telling you to do. And obligate yourself to do what you hear. Don't obligate yourself to do what you'll decide to do afterwards. Don't undertake to do what you'll intellectually understand. Because then you're going to understand what you want. You'll understand what it suits you to do, and you won't understand what it doesn't suit you to do. The first principle is I'm teaching you to do. You jolly well accept that you're going to do whatever you hear me teaching you. Questioning, that's something else we'll deal with in a moment. Philosophizing, we'll deal with in a moment. But the first principle is listen. Hear with an unbiased mind. Hear with an open mind. Every word I'm telling you, and you do it. That's the first step in learning. What about the philosophy? Strangely enough, one of the few places that the Rambam does get involved in philosophy is in Hilchos Korbanos and the laws of sacrifices, which seem to be the most unphilosophic part of learning, so unphilosophic that even the Briskers, who hate philosophy, choose Kodshim to learn because it's so precisionly mathematical and doesn't involve any philosophy. And the parts where the Rambam really gets carried away a little bit with philosophy in the Yad HaChazaka is in Kodshim. At the very end of Korbanos, of Hilchos Korbanos, the Rambam says the following. Afal pi shekol chukei haTorah gezeros heim kamoshi biyarnu b'soif me'ilo. Even though all the chukim, all the statutes of the Torah, are gezeros, they are laws which the Rabbeinu Shalom has given, as we've established at the end of me'ilo, roi lehisboinen bohen, one must deep learn in depth, b'chol ma she'atah yochol litein loitam, tein loitam. As far as you are capable of giving a philosophical reason, even for the chukim we're talking about, how much more so for the others, but even the chukim, those things which apparently have no logical reason, as far as you can go to find the logical reason, go and do it. And he goes on that that Shlomo HaMelech knew Roiv HaTam Shel Kol Chukei HaTorah. Shlomo HaMelech knew most of the reasons for the mitzvahs. And he goes on discussing the reason for the mitzvahs that he's just learned, and at the end he says the following. V'roiv dinei haTorah, and most of the laws of the Torah. I'll give you a clue, says the Rambam, in your philosophic search. Einon ela etzos merochok migodol haetza. All the mitzvot of the Torah, all the dinim of the Torah, are really advice. given to us from afar, from the Ribbono Shel Olam, letaken hadayos, to improve one's midas, one's character, one's personality, uleyasher kol hamasim, and to straighten one's actions. All the mitzvahs of the Torah. That's what Hillel meant when he said that the principle of the Torah is ve'ahavta l'reicha kamecha, be a mensch. That's what it's all about, every bit of it. Rambam doesn't say all this is roiv. The majority of the Torah is to make a mensch out of you. That's what it's all about. So in your philosophy, that's what you should look for. Whatever halacha you're trying to philosophize about, try and find in what way the practice of that law makes you more of a mensch. So how does this fit in with what we've just learnt? We've just learnt that the issur of avodah zarah, the prohibition of idolatry, and also the prohibition of lo tisu tosif v'lo sigra, is based on the principles of using your intellect, using your philosophy to take things further. Well, we see a little bit better from the Rambam at the end of Me'ilah, where the Rambam says the following. What's going on? About Torah, says the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Me'ilah, it is stated in the Torah, Ushamartem eskol chukosai veskol mishpatai v'asisa noisom. You must keep all the statutes and all the laws and you must do them. Omru chachomim, Chazal said, Liten shmira v'atziyo lechukim kemishpotim. To ensure that you do the chukim as much as you do the mishpotim. The mishpotim are the things whose philosophy is obvious. The chukim are the things whose philosophy is obscure. Chazal tell us that you've got to do them equally. Omru chachomim, one second. Then he goes on to some other things. So we see that the Rambam, although he says quite clearly at the end of Hilchos Korbanos that each person has to try as far as he can to understand the philosophy of the mitzvahs, to understand the reasoning behind the mitzvahs, that doesn't interfere with how you practice the mitzvahs. Practicing the mitzvahs is irrespective of your understanding of them. That has to be done chukim mishpatim, whether you understand it or you don't understand it, whether the reason is obvious or the reason is obscure. Asiyah and Shmira is the same with mishpatim as it is with chukim. You have to carry out the mitzvahs irrespective of your level of understanding of those mitzvahs. Where then is the place for philosophy? What then do you need philosophy for? If our method of paskening a shaila is not philosophical, if we're not permitted to allow our philosophical understanding of the Torah interfere with our practice of the Torah, our practice of the Torah follows a certain line. That's a mathematical system of working out what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from us at any given time. That's how we pasken halach. So what's the purpose of philosophy? What do we have to waste time on philosophy for? The one answer is given in the Torah itself, in the same parasha. Just the next piece of Al-Chumash, Ra'ei limadati eschem chukim u'mishpotim kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai. Says Moshe, see, I've taught you the chukim and mishpotim as God commanded me. La'asus kem bekerev ha'ot ha'shatem bo'im shom al-rishta, so that you can carry them out in the land to which you're coming. U'shemartem va'asisem. Shemartem, says Rashi, zu mishnah. Shemartem means mishnah. Now we learned last week what mishnah means. Mishnah means, now, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us what to do with what we've heard. In the previous little piece of Chumash, he said, listen, just hear what I've told you and don't add to it and don't detract from it. Just take it as it is and do it. Now he's coming on to the mitzvah of learning. Number one, Shemartem, says Rashi, zu mishnah. That's to take what you've now heard and learn it over and over and over again until you know it backwards. That's the first thing you have to do in learning. Still without adding and without detracting. Just as you heard it. Exactly as you heard it. That's what Mishnah is, as we learned last week. Going over and over it until you know it clearly. That's the mitzvah of Yediyah Satora. You've got to know it. Ushamartim. Va'asisem, says the Netziv. Va'asisem doesn't mean on doing the mitzvahs. Va'asisem means making. Making what? Make Torah. Be mechadish. Become a Talmid Chochem in terms of last week's shiur. Va'asisem, ushamartim, the first thing is go over and over what you've learned. You've heard a shir, revise it and revise it and revise it and revise it until it's clear in your mind from beginning to end, everything clear. You haven't added to it, you haven't subtracted from it, you haven't philosophized, you've just heard it, that's it, and you're practicing it. Now, asisim, now start being mechadish. Analyze it. Observe carefully. Pull it apart. Put it together again in a slightly different way. Use your own personality to understand it. Come out with a nuance. Come out with a new angle. Come out with a chiddush. Asisem, now you must do it. Why? Hihi chochmaschem uvinaschem la'enei ha'amim. If you will just carry out the Torah as we've described in the previous piece of Chumash, where you just hear and you do,
the goyim will look at you and they think you're a bit nuts, because that's not that you can't integrate Torah that way. Just to hear a shir and revise it and revise it and know it and then do it. It's like learning through Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and then going out to practice it. Let's say you take a person off the street and you learn through the whole of Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you learn the whole thing from beginning to end, and now he knows all the dinim. You say, I want you to revise this 100 times, and he revises it, and then you call him in and you examine him. Do you know every din? He knows every din absolutely. You say, right, now you know how to be a frum Jew. Go out and be a frum Jew. The goyim are going to laugh. It's not going to be flowing, it's not going to be integrated, it's not part of you. You don't know, there's no way you can integrate things that way. Integrate has to be through becoming a Talmid Chacham. Through va'asis and through toiling it and being mechadish, making your own thing of it. Taking what you've learned now that you know it clearly and making it your own. That's how you integrate it. And then, kihi chokhmaschem uvinaschem le'enei ha'omim. Ha'amim. Then the people will look at you, the goyim will be able to look at you. And they'll say, this is fantastic. That's Yiddishkeit. That's Torah. Look how integrated it is. Look how wise it is. Look how balanced it is. Look how noble it is. Asher yishmer es kol hachukim ha'ele, etc., etc. And they will say, ki mi goy gadol asher lo elokim krovim elav. The result of that, says the Sipurno, is Kiddush Hashem. But if goyim will come along and say, is that what a God's people does? Then the Ribbono Shelom is wonderful. And you'll find that mis'ahev shem shamayim al yadcho. Through you, the name of the Ribbono Shelom comes to be loved by humanity. In other words, the mitzvah of learning Torah carefully, of analyzing it, and being mechadish, being creative in your learning, is not just a mitzvah in learning. You're then going to carry out your Torah in a different way. It's then going to fit you because it's your own. It's not just your Rebbe's Torah which you've heard and now you've put on. You wouldn't go and take your Rebbe's suit and put on your Rebbe's suit and go out into the street. Why not? If it fits him, why shouldn't it fit me? You wouldn't think of doing that. So it is with Torah. You wouldn't think of taking someone else's Torah and just putting it on and walking out like that. That's got to be your Torah. And to make it your own, it's va'asisim. You've got to make it. You've got to toil in it. You've got to work in it. To make it your own, to see your own aspects in it, and to see your own personality in it. Then you can be a Kiddush Hashem. One last thing. Is that all? The only purpose of being mechadish in Torah, the only purpose of going further than Mishnah, is in order to impress the goyim? No. There's one other aspect as well, which isn't dealt with in this parsha, but that's the piece of Mesillas Yesharim we learned. We describe what a chosid is. A chosid is a person who takes the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam further. Now let's say my father says to me, please bring me a glass of water. So I say, oh, bring me a glass of water. He likes water. So I bring him one glass and I run and I bring him another glass, and 2 minutes later another glass, and 5 minutes later another glass. Am I a chosid? Is that what chasidus is? So what's gone wrong? He's asked for water, I've registered that he needs water, and I'm giving him more and more and more water. What's wrong with that? That's not chassidus, that's idiocy. Because to be a chassid, I've got to stop and think, why does he want water? Is it because he's thirsty? Or is it because he's taking a pill? If he's taking a pill, then I bring him a glass of water. When he's finished the pill, that's the end of it. If it's because he's thirsty, then I must watch to see how quickly he drinks the water. And if he drinks and drinks and drinks and finishes the glass, I see he's probably still thirsty. And he doesn't leave another drop at the bottom of the glass, then he doesn't have to tell me. I take the glass and I go and fetch some more. And if it's because he's taking a pill, then next time he has to take a pill, I'll just see him fumbling in his pockets for the pill, and I'll go and fetch a glass of water. That's a chassid. But how did I reach that level of chassidus? I asked why. Why does he want the water? Once I know why he wants the water, I know how to be a chassid. I know how to anticipate his needs. To be a chassid in Torah, to be able to take a mitzvah further than the basic minimum of halacha, I need to be a Talmid Chacham. I have to ask why. What is the philosophy of that mitzvah? To be able to take that mitzvah further. There I have to know the yesodis. I have to know what the chinuch calls the shoresh. When the chinuch talks about the meaning of a mitzvah, he doesn't use the usual word ta'am, taste. He uses shoresh, root. If I want to take that mitzvah further as a chosid, I need the shoresh. I need to know exactly what that mitzvah is all about. And that's why we're told, loy am ha'aretz chosid. To be a chosid, you can't be an amoritz. You've got to be a Talmid Chacham. A Talmid Chacham, we learned last week what that is. Talmid Chacham is somebody who learns one thing out of another. He establishes the principle, the shoresh, the root. He knows why his father's drinking the water, not just that he's drinking the water or how he's drinking the water. He knows why, and therefore he knows how to project that further. He knows why the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to wear tzitzis. He knows why the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to say Kriya Shema. He knows why the Ribbono Shel Olam gives the din of Parah Aduma, even if he can reach that level of intellect. Each one according to his own intellectual level penetrates as far as he can into the will, into the rotten of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and then uses that in the way he carries out the mitzvah. The important thing to know about the chosid though is he doesn't do more mitzvahs. It's the way he does that mitzvah. If you carry on learning the siddur yeshor, you'll see what it is. It's not that he does more mitzvahs, but in order to know how to do that mitzvah like a chosid, to do a mitzvah with more love than is required as a basic minimum, with more dedication than is required as a basic minimum, to put more of myself with more mesiras nefesh, more giving of myself to the mitzvah than is required as a basic minimum, for that I need to be a Talmid Chacham. I need to understand the mitzvah clearly. I need to know the why of the mitzvah, and then use that principle in my approach to that particular mitzvah, the way I carry it out. That's not lo sosifa velo sigru. Lo sosifa velo sigru is when I philosophize about including or excluding particular halachas. That one is never allowed to do. All the halachas are a basic minimum for everybody. The individuality comes in the chassidus. If you want to be a yochid, you want to be an individual, you want to do your mitzvahs differently, then you have to, number one, be a talmid chacham, and when you've reached the principle of the mitzvah, then you're able to apply yourself to do the mitzvah in a very unique way, to do it as only you know how, because only you have discovered that aspect, that shoresh, that meaning, that root of what the Ribbono Shel'olam is really asking when he says, put on tzitzis. What does he really want from you? As the Rambam says, how does he want that to make me a better person? Once I understand how tzitzis is meant to make me a better person, I know how to become a better person in other ways too, in the tzitzis style. Once I know how kashrus is meant to make me a better person, I know how to work in myself in other areas also to achieve that same effect. But I have to understand how the Ribbono Shel'olam expects kashrus to affect me, how he expects Shabbos to affect me, how he expects tefillin to affect me, and so on and so forth. Again, I don't want anybody to despair. And firstly, what I said last on Tisha B'Av applies, obviously, as far as one's relationship to these things are concerned. But I'm going to tell you again, a Talmid Chacham is not measured by how much he knows. We've learned that already. That's a Chacham is measured by how much he knows. But a Mevin, Talmid Chacham, in terms of our definition of Talmid Chacham, is not measured in terms of how much he knows. Ideally, one is meant to be a Talmid Chacham and a Chacham. You should know the whole of the Torah, and you should also be a Talmid Chacham. But if that's not yet possible, one can't be a Talmid Chacham and a Chacham from day one, then at least one should be a Talmid Chacham from day one. That's possible. You need a bit of Chochmah to start. Obviously, you can't be a Talmid Chacham if you have no material. But if you have even a little material, one posuk in Chumash, one Gemara Shir, a line of Mishnayos, a piece of Pirkei Avos, a Rashi, a Medrash, a piece of Mesilas Yeshorim, a few lines of the Chazon Ish. In terms of Chochmah, we've all got as much as we need material to become Talmidei Chachomim. We're not short of material, that's not our problem. We've got as much material as we need to become Talmidei Chachomim. We like to fool ourselves and we like to say, you know why I'm inadequate? You know why I'm not a Talmid Chacham? Because I'm not learning enough. It's not true. That's not why we're not Talmid Chacham. It's because we're not learning properly. Because we're busy trying to chap a little bit more instead of to reach the depth as far as we can in what we're learning. To listen to a shir and first hear Shema, listen to it from beginning to end, and then to be mamik, then to deepen and deepen and deepen and to express your own individuality. To read a Chazal, to read a piece of Gemara or a Rashi, or whatever it is, to hear what it says, go over and over and over again until you've got it clear what it says and you'll never forget it, and then to start deepening, deeper and deeper and deeper. That's our problem. That's where our fault lies. Not in Chochmah, not that we don't have enough Chochmah. We need more Chochmah. When our Talmid Chochmah level is caught up to where our Chochmah is, then it's time for all of us to go to Yeshiva. Because then we've got to get on a crash course to get more Chochmah. But at the moment, it's going to solve the symptom if we all even had the opportunity of going off and to learn full time and we're going to try and get through Shas. What's it going to help? So we'll know more. So we'll become Chachomim, but not Talmidei Chachomim. The first thing to see is that our style of learning is correct. When our style of learning is correct, the more the better. If you're learning properly, the more you can learn, the better, the greater you'll be. Every new thing you learn will make you greater. If your style of learning is wrong, if you're just collecting information but you're not integrating that information and you're not deepening yourself in that information and you're not growing through that information, what does it help to collect more? You forget what you learned yesterday and you learn more today. What's the point of it? There is no point. One has to know that in this little parsha of Chumash is laid down the secret of success in learning. Makes no difference if you've got 1 hour a day to learn or half an hour a day to learn or 15 hours a day to learn. The formula in this piece of Chumash is equal to men, to women, to older children. Doesn't apply to younger children, but to children over the age of 15, it does apply. How old are you, Nachum?
Made it.
You made it. That's good. then this all applies. What is the principle? The principle is number one, Shema. Number two, Loi Tosifu V'Loi Sigru. No philosophy at that point. And that's why really, ideally, we like to be past the Shema level before the child is 15. A child of 15 should already know Shas. It's been through, all through Mishnayos, the whole of Shas. So he's already familiar, he's heard, he's done his Mishnah. Because before he's 15, he doesn't start philosophizing. He only starts philosophizing when he's 15. So preferably the thing is to get over it all when he's before he's 15. If one hasn't, then we have to take it bit by bit. You're learning a piece of Gemara, you're learning a piece of Torah. First, Shema that Torah. Hear it without distortion and with an open mind, without fakniotkai. That's number one. And number two, Ushamarten, make sure that you'll never lose it. Make sure that you've repeated it and revised it so many times that it's there to stay. When you've done that, then be creative. And the result of that is that it will fit you. It will be your Torah, not your Rebbe's Torah. It will be your contribution to Torah and your understanding of Torah. And then when you practice that halacha, then when you live that halacha, the goyim will be able to say, Mikel Godel, who's this wonderful Ribono Shel Olam, who has this incredible effect on a people who's so noble and so beautiful.